Today on the show, what was once a dream is now a frightening reality for those who don't listen to our podcast. Hello there, and welcome to The Lost Cantina, the podcast that explores the stories, characters, and themes behind some of our favorite people in the galaxy far, far away. I'm Jaden.
And I'm Kevin. Welcome, everybody. Welcome to episode 6 of Ahsoka. This one is I think, has, like, we had one of the coolest entrances of, like, a pre-character, you know, that we've seen before, but now... that's all I'll say. That, because the spoilers, you know, obviously heavy spoiler warning for this episode.
Basically, Legends fans are eating tonight. They are dining on a feast, a veritable banquet of shit, if you will.
And as per usual, you all know we're going to do a brief synopsis of the episode and talk a little bit about the quotes and stuff. But we have a lot of lore to touch upon here, because there's a lot of little tidbits and Easter eggs that happen in this one that if you didn't pay attention, you do miss it. It's cool, you'll see it, but you might miss it. The other thing too is the theme of this episode. We've kind of talked it over a little bit, and I think we both agreed that this theme for this episode, it's almost touched upon in every scene.
Yeah.
And the theme is that of decisions and making decisions and their outcome, as well as kind of like a mix between the philosophical thought experiment of fate, right? And if we truly have free will, or if our decisions are really our own, or if maybe what is presented in front of us is predetermined and influences us to go to a specific choice, that really, because it's predetermined and those things that are thrown into us are predetermined, we might actually not, you know, have a real free will choice.
Yep. But before we get on to that, a little bit of housekeeping. Those of you who listened to us before, you know the deal. We love to hear from our listeners, so please feel free to email us at thelostcantinapod@gmail.com with your thoughts and episode ideas. You might hear it in a future episode. And of course, you connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at thelostcantina.
Now, I know we're doing the Ahsoka episodes, and we want to get these finished before we start pumping out the other episodes.
Yes.
Just be aware, as soon as this is finished, we have stuff that is going to be a little bit different than just talking about a show.
Yes. So look forward to that. It'll be a lot more theory, a lot more explanations and explorations of themes and ideas in the Star Wars universe. But we want to get through this first because... well, we love talking about it, and the writer's strike is over, so we're just trying to get this done so we can keep talking about Star Wars at the end of the day.
Now, before we dive into this one, obviously, as per usual, if you haven't watched the episodes and you haven't watched this one, go do that. What are you doing? You're crazy.
You're being silly.
But watch them. And this is gonna be a really fun episode. We're gonna take a quick break though, and we'll get into it.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Okay, now that we've taken a quick break, here we go. Let's go. Let's dive into this one.
Yes. The episode begins with a discussion sequence where Hu Yang and Ahsoka discuss what happened with Sabine and how they both feel about the situation. it starts to set up the theme for the entire episode that we kind of talked about earlier. It starts with the sounds of the Pergil coming through what we can assume is basically like them swimming in space, but like oceany. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting because we're seeing like hyperspace, but like dialed up to 12.
Yeah, it's cool. There's colors. It's not just blue and white.
You wrote in the script, they went to plaid, and I'm very happy about
that. They did. I've said it like three times now in the episodes, like this one and last one. Like they went to plaid.
They went to plaid. You know, they're inside of a whale right now. Huyang is amazed by it. He's like, you know, wow, man, I really have done it all. And Ahsoka's not really like, I don't know, she's not really fazed by it, but I'm kind of like, come on, lady, you tamed a space whale. Enjoy yourself a little here. She starts to talk about how she remembers some of the stories that Huyang used to tell her, like while they were on their journeys. And he says, History of the Galaxy, parts 1, 2, and 3. And there's a theory out there that is referring to the prequel trilogy. And then Ahsoka says, one being the best, of course, which Kevin also wrote in here, debatable.
Hey, you know, I'm
calling you out on this because it's not debatable. 3 is the best one.
Yes, thank you. 3 is the best one. I agree. 3 is the best one. But, okay, 2, in my view, forgettable. I'm sorry, but
2 is the worst one. Of the prequels, 2 is the worst one. And overall, it is the third worst one, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Of the 9, it is the third worst
one. Episode 1, though, I like episode 1. I like Phantom Menace. I think it's really good. Do I think it's the best out of the original 3, like, prequel trilogy? No. But it has some of the best music.
It has pod racing, which dials it up to at least, you know, it at least breaks into the top 6 for me. It has pod racing. All right, that elevates it. So Huyang asks if Ahsoka wants to hear a story, and she says no. And he asks if she has a story for him. And she gets serious and starts talking about how she knows Sabine went willingly.
Now, she tells him that she knew that the decision Sabine made, you know, she knew what it was and purposefully didn't tell Hera.
Yeah.
And I think the big thing with her not telling Hera, like, that's just one of those things where she doesn't want to disappoint Hera. But also, I think it might make Hera want to, like, go with her and all this other shit. Like, I think Ahsoka knew she needed to do this alone and didn't also want to, like, muddy the water with Hera in any way.
Until Ahsoka has all the facts of the situation, I don't think she wanted to burden Hera with that knowledge.
Yeah. And now Ahsoka is kind of mesmerized how one decision could
get everyone
make or
killed.
Break everything, right? Yeah, literally. So she even says, she's like, you know, there would be no war. There would be no, you know, Thrawn, none of this shit. And then Huyang just looks and says, and no Ezra. And Ahsoka gets it, right? Like, she understands it. She kind of like nods, but she's still like a little tiffed. And she says she was fated to make that choice.
Yep.
But Ahsoka clearly is kind of juggling here with the whole match between choice and fate, and she's a little bit like having difficulty with that. She even says there wasn't enough time to prepare her to make the right choice, which I find odd, because if she was fated to make that choice, right?
Yeah.
How could we have prepared her to make the right choice? Because if it's fate, what's the right choice? Is that really a thing? You know, like, already we're into the thesis, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And also the thing you remember too is Star Wars deals a lot with absolutes.
Mm-hmm.
And if she was absolute, like in her mind, the absolute right choice was to do whatever to save Ezra.
Yeah. I mean, Huyang even says the Force provides you with insight, but it does not give one all the answers.
Yes.
And then he says, perhaps for Sabine, it was the only choice. And Ahsoka says, a choice she made for herself. And he says, that is your fear. Again, she already had fears, you know, with the Anakin episode, like, she was supposed to be facing a lot of those fears, but, and he calls her out, obviously, mm-hmm. but this philosophical discussion here is basically going to be the continuation of the whole episode. Like, it just, every scene you're going to touch upon it. So now we've gone from fate to choices to her fear, right? So there are multiple philosophical thought processes that she's having with this droid, which I find really interesting. Because to have a droid be the one to have this kind of like discussion is really interesting. It's not a living creature, if you will, in terms of like biology and organics, but technically, if you think about like what they have as a consciousness, like we are planning on, by the way, talking about this in a future episode, talking about like what is the consciousness of a droid and are droids like alive and that kind of stuff. But I just think it's interesting that she's having this discussion with a droid. However, this droid clearly has, you know, insight into the Force and has like a lot of understanding of it. So I found that to be really, really interesting.
We're going to have a whole episode about this, but just to preface what you're saying for the audience, there's a theory that droids need to go through routine mind wiping or memory wiping in order to maintain their base programming. If they do not, they end up developing a personality. So then the debate is whether or not that personality could be considered sentient. And we're going to get into that in a whole episode dedicated. And I can't wait to talk about that and how our favorite Star Wars characters might technically be slave owners, but we'll get into that later. But with Huyang's case, he has been around for thousands of years or a thousand years, some long ass fucking time. And he's dealt with a lot of Jedi and learned a lot of experiences through that. So like he's built up some, so he kind of has what people could consider, you know, a soul or a consciousness. So he, you know, to make his own decisions.
So after this question and this kind of discussion, Ahsoka's like clearly like, okay, I'm done. So she says she does want to talk about one of his stories. And he ends the scene by saying, a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
We all did the Peter Griffin point at the camera. He said,
I was more like the Leonardo, like, oh.
So after this, it switches to follow Sabine on her journey. The next scene takes place in the Eye of Sion in its remaining time, you know, heading towards wherever they're going to end up. And Sabine is waking up in her cell. Kevin put on her in perfect eyeshadow.
Dude, her makeup's like fucking pristine. Like, oh my God. I was like, damn, who did they have a makeup artist like on the ship? Was one of the droids like, I got you. You'll look great when you wake up.
Honestly, it would not put it past Sabine to have her makeup in a certain pouch on her belt. Like,
true.
If she's stressed, she does her makeup. I could see her doing that.
Hell yeah.
That would fit with the character. She starts to get up. She's, you know, looking around. She starts pacing. And then all of a sudden, Baylan's skull just pops up. And she wittingly says, I was hoping for a room with a view. And she was not necessarily not promised that she wouldn't be a prisoner, but more like someone who joined on the journey. And he wasn't really happy about the treatment that she'd been given. And he replies with, I would think this would be an opportunity for reflection. And she responds with, I try to avoid that. And he replies really quickly with, I can understand why.
Nah.
And then he leaves her. He just walks out and basically being like, yeah, you're a child. I'm leaving, man.
Yeah.
I love how petty it is.
So he left her to go to the bridge, right? And the man, I gotta say, the man is an absolute unit. This guy's fucking huge. Yeah. And I know we've talked about this before, but man, his presence on screen is just insane. Like he really has this commanding presence. It really is one of those things where like you see him on screen and you're like, whoa, I don't want to fuck with this guy. And I will say it again. Matt Bidell is my choice for Baylan Skoll. They're the same height, same build. They look very similar. He can do accents up the wazoo. Like, that's all I'm going to say about that. Anyway.
I did see someone pitching Nick Offerman, and I was like, I don't hate that.
Nah, I don't hate that, but I don't know. Maybe, yeah. So anyway, he meets with Elsbeth and Shin, and Elsbeth asks how their prisoner is. And Elsbeth then asks if he's going to keep the prisoner, you know, still. Like, he's like, are you still going to keep her as a prisoner? And he says that her focus to find Ezra Bridger blinds her. And I believe she can still be of some use to us. As he says this, they exit hyperspace and we see the Eye of Sion approach this ringed planet called Peridia. We get a great lore dump in this scene. So Elsbeth claims that it's, quote, the ancient homeworld of my ancestors, the Dathomiri, end quote. Woo! That was a nice crazy little, what? I loved it. I thought it was finding out that changes the game in terms of like where they came from, right? So Balin talks about how the Jedi archives had information on this planet, but only that it was a migration route for star whales, as he calls them. And he says, you know, they go and die, right? Like he mentions a little later in the scene, he's like, it's a migration route for them to go and die. So Elsbeth claims that her ancestors were the first to harness and ride the Purrgil, which is fucking cool.
Yeah,
because that means that they had this ability to do this for like a long time, but it's one of those things where she did not think that Ahsoka would be able to do that, which I think is a miscalculation on her part.
I don't see why she wouldn't be able to like that. Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Right.
To me.
Right. So then it's said that, quote, Paridia is a graveyard. So as the eye continues to go to the planet, we see that the ring around it is made up of bones of dead Purrgil. So I found that seeing this decrepitness of death brings this like new perspective on these creatures. Like we thought, based on the knowledge that we've been presented prior, that we were seeing these more mystical in nature kind of creatures, right? Like there wasn't like a shit ton of info on these guys. And they were kind of cool and mystical, you know. We don't know how old they are, all that stuff.
Yeah, we don't know where they come from. Yeah,
exactly. But now they're just like any other creature almost. And to see this kind of side of them, you know, like the side of death, it kind of adds almost an even more different type of mystical nature. Like I found that to be very. At first, I was like, oh, now they're just like any creature. But now as I thought about it, they're kind of like even more mystical. Like they go to this one planet to die, this one planet, and their bones become the ring. And it's like, wait a minute, why are they so special if they're also all over the place? Like what? I don't know. I find these creatures to be fascinating and I want more lore.
I think immediately the setup for this planet is fantastic. And
oh, brilliant.
I think it's, you know, it's. Slight spoilers. We're probably going to be seeing more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Even going beyond the next couple episodes. But I just think like the idea of like there's just so much lore, there's so much new stuff that can be found on this planet is just so cool to me. And I'm like, they know how to set it up, and I'm very excited, especially with just that little detail. I love that. The bones, like the planet itself surrounded by bones of dead ancient creatures that can traverse the galaxy.
This is sick.
It is very cool. All right, so back in her cell, Sabine is met by guards and Shin. They take a small ship to the surface. Everyone on the ship piles in this little RV camper and they fly down. The weather is not great. There are giant storm clouds all over the planet. And as they get through the storm, they see giant monoliths of what we can assume are the Night Sisters.
It's so cool.
It's so cool. And the planet is a complete wasteland.
Yeah. There's like water and stuff. It's like a weird swampish.
I got Mandalore vibes a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. I got Mandalore vibes, but I also got like, this is going to sound really weird, but like when you look at like Greenland and like,
oh yeah,
like, they're like with the sections where they have like, you know, like, or even like Scotland, like really North Scotland, right? Like where it's just like grass and like lots of rock and like streams and shit. Like that's what it looks like.
So Balin looks at Elsbeth, but she doesn't break her view on the structure head. She's just going looking straight ahead. A giant building on the side of a mountain ridge. They land on what appears to be like a launch pad.
Mm-hmm.
And as they exit the ship, they're greeted by three women dressed in red.
Whoa.
It's so cool. It's like, oh, right away, I'm like, oh, fuck, these are Night Sisters.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. On top of the structure is an almost identical temple to the one on Cetos. But this one looks different. This one looks like it's been maintained.
Yeah, it's like brand new.
Yeah. The sisters they meet are they start to communicate, and they turn to Elsbeth, and Elsbeth bows her head as they call her a child of Dathomir.
It's so cute. It's so sick, dude.
Which I'm curious with that, because they said this, the planet is the ancient home of the Night Sisters, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're calling her a child of Dathomir, but they consider themselves. So I'm like, is Dathomir just the name that they adopted for the planet that is in the Star Wars universe? They just like kind of take it and plant it, because like, wouldn't this planet that they're on now, if this is their ancient home, shouldn't that be Dathomir?
Okay, makes sense. By the way, fun fact: the main Night Sister, or also we'll get her new name, is played by Claudia Black from like Stargate and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
A badass, dude. Yeah. Huh. I didn't realize it at first, and then I saw it in the credits, and I was like, "Wait a second!" And I had to rewind, and I was like, "Holy shit!" But yeah, she's in like every sci-fi franchise. I fucking love it. Shout out to my Stargate fans. I wish I could do a Stargate show. I love Stargate.
Stargate's pretty fucking cool. So Elsbeth acknowledges the one as the Great Mother.
And that's her, by the way.
She says, you heard our call to you in a dream. And she replies, your visions guided me across the stars. And Elsbeth seems like she's fucking starstruck. Like, it's great. She's like, it's like, these are the people that like have been in her dreams.
Yeah.
And, you know, this just kind of shows how strong she is if she can communicate through galaxies.
Dude, the grandmother's scary.
Shin just says to Balin, more witches.
Eh.
Like, yeah, you're just fucking underestimating that sentence there.
Yeah, right.
The grandmother says she is glad they came just as Thrawn promised. As soon as his name is mentioned, Elsbeth asks where he is, and they explain he is on the way. Now, this next line has had some discussion online quite a lot. We hear a deep rumble, and one of the mothers says, it reeks of Jedi. As Elsbeth turns and looks at Sabine. But many also believe they meant Skull.
Yeah, he's... The online discussions, people are saying that, like, yeah, sure, Sabine reeks of Jedi, but not as much as Skull. Like, everybody online, I remember when this episode premiered, people were saying, was she talking about her or him? And because we'll get into more of that, but because here's the thing, like, we know, he's not a Sith. He is not necessarily
a Jedi.
Like, succumbed to the dark side, if you will. He is the first true, like, what we've seen in this live action lore. He is really like the first true fallen Jedi that we've seen.
There's Grey Jedi, then there's Fallen Jedi. I think I would consider.
And Grey Jedi is such a weird phase too, because the discussion within the community, we're very like, kind of, what is a Grey Jedi real? Is a Grey Jedi not real? There's not really a canon of quote Grey Jedi, but like,
yeah,
Ahsoka's kind of what one could consider a Grey Jedi, especially now after watching the Anakin stuff, like how she's been like trained. Like, there's so much shit on like. I remember when the Grey Jedi photo came out online years ago and people were like, whoa, that's cool. And it's like, is it real though? Kind of not really.
Honestly, Ahsoka, she's just a freelancer. You know, she's just an independent contractor. You know,
Well, that's what Skull is. But he really likes the dark side, that's for sure. They're just force users at this point.
Spicy, like, they don't need to.
You don't need to have fucking Jedi in everything. Okay.
I disagree.
I'm not saying like to be Jedi. I'm saying like you can just be a force user. You don't have to follow the Sith or the Jedi like construct of what it means. Like, you can be a force user and just be, right? Like, sure, there's the light side and the dark side. There are two aspects, and there are two very extreme, like polar opposite followings of each side. But like, if you look at Mace Windu, right? He uses both. He follows Jedi teachings, but he's going to embrace to a degree another part of the Force.
It's
just the Force, man. The Force is fucking everywhere, and it's everything. You just gotta, you don't have to be a Jedi.
Let me tell you about the mail. Let me tell you about the mail, Mac. Let me tell you about the mail.
Yeah, right.
So they say it reeks of Jedi, and one of them says it is dangerous. So they use these little orbs that they had earlier, and they look kind of similar to the map. So they're in the same technology area, and they combine Sabine, like they combine around Sabine and like trap her in like this little bubble,
little red like wiring thing.
Yeah, And they're like, it will wait in solitude. Sabine is then guided down into the building as she yells at Baylan that they had a deal and asks where Ezra is. And Baylan honestly looks visibly upset as Sabine is thrown into herself. Because, you know, he made her a promise. You know, he's...
Yeah.
It's so funny because, like, his attitude is just basically like, Jedi make promises and break them. I don't, because I'm not a Jedi. Therefore, I'm going to honor my promise.
Yeah, it's weird. Now, the next scene's really cool because a low, like, loud rumble begins, right? And we see this planet's equivalent of wolves. They begin to howl in front of the structure, right? And this is kind of cool because, as we all know, Baylan Skull and Shin Hati are symbolized as those two wolves from Rebels. Like, they are the two wolves, like, chasing the moon, if you will, yep. Right? So it's cool to see them, these equivalent of wolves, before this scene that takes place with the two of them, because it's a great symbolization of them howling at the moon, right?
Symbolization I took it for was that the wolves have arrived on the planet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so Elsbeth leaves, right? She takes the small ship and she leaves, but Baylan and Shin, they're going to stay at the temple. And Baylan is walking around looking at the planet's surface because they're really high up and he's just like staring around at the planet. And he says out loud, he goes, "This is a land of dreams and madness. Children's stories come to life." And she is like, "I know no such stories." Because she's like, "I don't know what the hell you're talking about." Yep. And he goes, "You weren't raised at the temple. Stories of this galaxy are considered folk tales, some ancient past long forgotten." And she says, "With good reason. Sometimes stories are just stories." And he kind of looks at her, and throughout this conversation, he starts getting a little serious. And yep. Like, this is that more like serious tone of Baylan Skull that we've seen before a couple times. Cause he has this kind of like old man, like, giddiness to him at some point, but like, yeah. This he gets like super serious, right? He gets super serial. "When I was a bit older than you are now, I watched everything I knew burn." And Shin just looks excited, right? She's just like, "Oh, he's telling a story." And yep. And I guess, you know, her master never told her the story, clearly, because he's telling
and I think
her
that's
now.
Really what it is. She's more than anything, she's curious to hear about his past because he doesn't talk about it.
He
strikes me as someone who's more who focuses on training and missions and their jobs versus anything else.
But also, he's opening up to her, which I think is a good sign that, you know, he trusts her. And like, she's kind of like, "Oh, wow." She's like, "He hasn't done this, you know?" And so she asks, she goes, "The Jedi Temple?" Like, she's really excited about the story. And he just nods at her and he says, "I couldn't make sense of it at the time. As you get older, look at history, you realize it's all inevitable. The fall of the Jedi, rise of the Empire, it repeats again and again and again." So she gets excited and then states, "Then this is our turn now. Won't our alliance with Thrawn finally bring us into power?" And he just shakes his head, right? Like, he's like, "That's not what it's about."
Yep.
The next line that Baylan says, I will tell you, this shows to me that he hasn't truly succumbed to the dark side. I'm just going to say that out loud, like, right away. That's this line right here. But it definitely, he seems to have a completely different view on the Force, right? And maybe both the dark and the light side in general. He says, "That sort of power is fleeting. What I seek is the beginning, so I may finally bring this cycle to an end."
Daenerys Stormborn over here.
That's what I thought. I was like, "Oh, you're going to break the wheel. Okay, cool, cool, cool. I'm into it.
Break that wheel."
And she says, "And that beginning is here." And before he answers, he pauses and then he instantly changes his mood. Like, he's a cheerful nature again. And he puts his hand on her shoulder and he's just like, "Ha, if the old stories are true." And then nods and walks off and goes downstairs. And I find that to be a very strange, like, just a very strange conversation ender.
Yeah.
He is, I wrote it down, he is oh so mysterious. Because he really is. He's the most interesting character in the show, in my opinion. Most of these characters we've seen before, he is an enigma. I don't fucking get this guy. Clearly, I've seen the last episode and I understand him a lot more. But, like, woo, this guy's the coolest character in the show, in my opinion.
Well, hold your horses, because we're about to get introduced to my favorite character in the show.
There we go.
I don't want to oversell this, but...
There is no overselling it. It's that perfect.
This sequence might be one of the best character intro scenes in Star Wars since Vader walked down that hallway in A New Hope. Like, holy shit. It was like, all right, Legends people, you've been waiting. We've heard you. You've screamed, make Thrawn a villain. Do it, you bitches. And we said, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to have it happen. We're going to make it a thing. But before that, Sabine is in her cell, pacing around, wishing for guidance from Ahsoka. She even tries to use the Force on the door. The door actually starts to shake, but it's not her. Every character that we've seen so far starts staring past the cameras. All of a sudden, a giant ship appears in the sky. It is a Star Destroyer. But this Star Destroyer is different. It has a little bit of gold mixed into it. But on the bottom, we can see the unmistakable markings of the Chimera. It flies over the top of the structure, and it opens its lower hangar, and shields activate. We hear motion and movement, and we see stormtroopers. But these stormtroopers are not the clean, white, polished troopers that we know of and love in the Star Wars universe. These are dirty. They are damaged. Their armor is cracked and peeling. It's being held together by red ribbons and gold that has been poured into the cracks. Have you ever seen a vase that's been broken? You'll notice sometimes they put gold dust in it to try to refuse it. That's what the armor looks like, and that's what the ship looks like.
It's called, by the way, that is the Japanese art of kintsugi.
Kintsugi, thank you.
It's where you take something like broken pottery, for instance, and repair it by mending. The Wikipedia thing has a great one. Mending the areas of breakage, dusted or mixed with powdered gold, silver, or platinum. And it's one of those things where it's to show the beauty in the chaos. Right?
Which that, like, speaks so well to what we're seeing on screen. Oh my gosh. This has not been confirmed whether or not it's the troops doing this or this is just the music. But all of the troopers standing there in their damaged gold armor, gold and red armor, we just hear Thrawn, 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 Thrawn.
So fucking sick, dude.
And it's like, I'm like, I fucking hope that is in the shot. Like, I'm fairly certain it is, but like, the idea that these are his most composed and loyal warriors, but even now they cannot help chanting his name as they know that after 10 years in hell, they're going home.
It's so fucking awesome.
It's so fucking cool, dude. And then all of a sudden we see one trooper, he just turns, and instead of the normal shore trooper helmet, he has a gold death mask on his fucking
face.
It's
like a gladiator fucking mask.
Yes.
And we hear we hear a guitar come in and like this Roman style drum. It's just,
this is the Empire.
This is the real Empire. This is the Empire we've always heard about.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And that golden faced warrior, he just simply says, march. And they all start to follow Thrawn down the gangway. And as he approaches, you know, the party that has brought him his salvation, he just says, what was first just a dream has become a frightening reality for those who may oppose us. God fucking damn, dude. Oh my God. It's so cool.
It is fucking sick. Like, his entrance is the Empire of what we really like. When I hear Obi-Wan Kenobi talking about the Empire, this is what I would think, like,
this
as
is what
a kid,
I picture.
This is the Empire, right? This is not the Rebels Empire we kept seeing, you know, that were just goofy and shit, right? Like, this is, like, the real deal.
And he, oh my God, he just walks up and is just like, everything that interests is like, this is the guy that is going to be fighting Star Wars characters for the next, I don't know, what do you think, like, 4 or 5 years?
Something like that, yeah. It's going to be
intense. Whatever they have planned, because I know they announced like Grogu movie and a Mandalorian movie. It's like they got plans for this fucker. He's gonna be great.
So he acknowledges the mothers and Elsbeth, and we believe, I think Elsbeth did come back, or I don't know if she really went back to the Isian. I'm not sure, but Elsbeth is there, and she says it will probably take about 3 rotations to get ready to leave because they have cargo that they got to put on the ship. So she's like, okay. we're gonna like take a little bit of time. We're gonna get ready. It should be pretty quick. And he's like, that's, you know, Thrawn is fine with that. He's like, okay, that's acceptable. And then yep. he finds out that they brought Sabine, and his reaction is kind of like, wait, what? There's some, like, it throws a wrench in the plan, but like, you know, this is like the best tactician ever. So he's yep. just kind of like, all right. And he just looks, and the mother said that they did not see it in their prediction. And that, to me, again, you know, we're back in there. So here's another example of maybe fate exists, but there are ways to alter it. Maybe it's more fluid, right? Like,
yeah.
like how the pathways in, you know, the world between worlds, maybe it's like a fluid, right? Like it's a river, kind of like how Ahsoka got there. Yep. And those pathways, they go all over the place. Maybe there are options. But yeah, like they see the future, but also there's parts that maybe they don't see that can get affected, right?
Yeah.
So Skull says that it's his doing, and Elsbeth introduces him as a mercenary. However, Thrawn dismisses this because when he's introduced, Thrawn knows who he is and says, "Then you must be General Baylan Skull of the Jedi Order." And all of them just turn and stare at him, all the mothers and stuff. And yep. he's just like, and here's the thing though. Thrawn respects these kinds of past achievements, right? Doesn't matter what side it is. He respects them. He's always respected his enemy. The first episode we see in Rebels, he respects the enemy, right?
Yeah. The other thing too, you got to remember is Thrawn does not have a problem with Jedi.
No, he doesn't.
Thrawn is not the Emperor. The Jedi, if he could have an army of Jedi leading his battalions of troopers that were loyal to him, he would do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If he had to wipe out a planet made up entirely of Jedi, he would do it.
Yep.
It's just what the objective is. The objective right now for him is to restore the Empire and destroy the New Republic. Yep. So if this Jedi is willing to help him, I don't care what his reasons are.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Like when he has his first introduction in Rebels, he respects the enemy. He understands their history, their culture, all those things. Now, granted, it's a tactical move to understand these things because then you can understand better how your enemy thinks, reacts, all that stuff. But also, he has a respect for it because to him, he's like, I'm not just going to destroy something and like, that's it. Like, I need to understand it, but also like, I should be respecting it. And like, I think of like, this is going to sound really weird, but like, I think of like, Native Indigenous Americans, right? Like a lot of the times, like now they're granted that from the friends I have, like they've said like, oh yeah, when you go hunting, like you really need to respect like what you're hunting. Like you need to be like understanding of how you need to understand how it moves, how it will react to you when you kill it. Like you need to be able to respect that and be like thankful, you know, about it. Like that's the kind of the same mentality is like, be respectful. Like that's his thing. And what's really funny is when the mothers just start staring at Baylan's Skull, he just looks at Thrawn and he goes, I parted ways with the Jedi long ago.
Yeah.
And the first thing Thrawn says instantly goes, you would not be the first.
I love that. I love that so much. The fact that he's just like, he knows, you know, like there's that theory that that Thrawn knows that Anakin turned to Darth Vader. And he deduced it, and I love that idea of him being like, oh yeah,
you. Yeah, he knows.
You know. Thrawn agrees that Sabine will be of great use and orders her to be brought to him. And when she appears before him, he says, I understand it is you that I have to thank for my escape from exile. And she asks about Ezra, and he calls out her choice. He says, how that singular focus will reshape our galaxy.
He's gonna
honor the agreement, and he actually has. We find out the Roman Empire face guy's name is Captain Enoch. So or it says to take off her cuffs. He gives her provisions and a mount, and the intel on the intel that Thrawn has on where Ezra might be.
Mm-hmm.
Sabine is basically like, "What's the catch?" And Thrawn replies, "You helped my cause. Now I shall help yours." But he then tells her that once he leaves the planet, they're going to be stuck there. He even suggests that Ezra might already be dead. And she retorts, if you survived, I'm sure he's doing just fine. And then he hits her with, you have gambled the fate of your galaxy on that belief. Because, yeah, think about that. How shitty that would be if she did go all that way and Ezra had been dead for like 5 years. You know, like.
But again, he even calls out the choice, right? The choice to show up. And I think that's there's so much about fate in Star Wars, but like these choices, again, are they really choices?
Yep.
Or are they just what's being presented? So anyway, she makes her way down to the entrance of the structure where she's given one of those wolf-like creatures. And we find out they're called a howler.
Yes.
They look pretty scary, right? They're pretty crazy scary, like a bat dog thing, right? Like they're just freaky looking. And Enoch just goes, Tota, and it sits down.
Yep.
And he just like chills. It's like a dog. It acts like a dog. So Enoch tells her that there are nomads that prey on people in the wasteland and gives her all of her weapons, including lightsaber. She gets everything back. He just hands it to her. And he says, die well. Again, these stormtroopers.
No faith on her coming back.
Yeah, but even then, like, these stormtroopers seem to be much more war and honor based, right? Like,
yeah,
they're different. These stormtroopers are fucking different, man. Like, just definitely not the type.
Hell.
Well, yeah, and just definitely not the type that we're used to. Like I said earlier, like they feel like gladiators, or what we've again always heard.
Your average stormtroopers were just guys trying to get a job. These guys are dedicated to the fucking cause. This is their cause is Thrawn and the galaxy reshaping.
And these guys are very hardened.
Yeah,
like they're super like battle like ready. Like these are like it feels like clones, like almost like how like the clones were like
even clones aren't this because these guys are fucked up. You got to think about this. Like I had a conversation with a friend of mine. We'll get into it later because they talk about the numbers of troops that they have left. Right, you got to imagine 10 years of keeping the men in line and keeping them together. You're gonna have heavy losses.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And so, and you know, sometimes it might even be self-inflicted. Like, you know, you got one stormtrooper who's sitting in that group being like, man, why can't we just go home? Like, why do we have to listen to Thrawn now? He got us stuck here. Thrawn's gonna kill that guy. Get him out of here. Like, he's, you know, not useful. You're not following my vision. We're gonna be here for a while. Stick with my plan. And I think that he would be perfectly willing to. In ancient Rome, there was a process called decimation where you get 10 men in a group. You pick lots, and the one who loses, the other 9 have to kill him. I would imagine Thrawn would have something similar on his ship, just to instill discipline and order with his men.
Yeah.
Like, you are not, if you're going to be a detriment to my ship, you're out of here.
Yeah, yeah. Now, after she leaves, Thrawn's watching with the group, and he tells Shin and Skull that they can go follow her. And Shin's a little confused and says that, you know, they thought that they were going to keep their promise, right? They're going to honor their agreement. And Thrawn says that she will have the opportunity to find Ezra just as promised. And if she does, they both get to get destroyed. Like, they're both going to die. You guys get to go fuck them up. So it's like, ooh, this man and his legal arguments, he's a wordsmith.
We call it a loophole in the business. So we start to see Sabine take her journey through the wasteland. You know, she's walking along. It's a rock-ridden, you know, poorly lit desert. The Howler seems to tell her something is up. She's using one of those, like, tracker beacon things that I think Han had one in Empire Strikes Back, and he was using it to, like, scan for Luke's life signs. And all of a sudden, she just suddenly gets attacked by the raiders that she was told about. She's able to fend them off, for the most part, with just her blasters, but she doesn't actually start to win until she starts using her lightsaber. We cut back and we start to see the ship being loaded by these mysterious cargo. The stormtroopers are now pushing these cargo lifters onto the ship. And some of them seem to be like, I don't know, shaking a little bit. Or like moaning slightly. Mm-hmm. We're not quite sure what's in there, but they look like coffins. Enoch informs Thrawn and Elsbeth. They're looking at a star map that Shin and Baylan have left to track Sabine. And Elsbeth asks, you know, should we send some troops to support them? And Thrawn stares at her like, I am the best tactician ever, idiot. What are you doing? Like, don't tell me what to do. She's just not used to being like second fiddle. She's been in charge this whole time. And now she's here and she's like, oh, shit, this guy's actually in charge. But Thrawn actually, it's so funny. Like, he gives her this look of like, you know, like, what are you doing? Tell me what to do. But then he realizes like, all right, I'm gonna be honest here. We do not have the troops to spare, besides the amount that I'm the small amount that I want to send. which gets back to what I said earlier, where it's like, this man, he had to do some shit to keep the guys he's got left. So these guys are fucking...
Oh, totally.
These guys must be the best of the best.
Yeah.
That he doesn't want... Because if you think about this, like, when, you know, if I was Thrawn, when I get into the... back into the galaxy, the men who are on my ship, they're the ones that are going to be my commanders in any ground operation that I have. Like, that private who survived 10 years in hell has been trained up to, like, colonel level. Like, the second they get the second they get back to the real world, he is in charge. He is in charge of his own Stormtrooper Legion. Like,
oh, totally.
Because that dude will be so loyal. It's a, think of like commissars, you know, in the Soviet Union army. Like, that guy's going to be like, nope, we are with Thrawn. Whatever your little petty squabbles are, done.
Yeah. And so now we go back to Sabine, and she's walking around, and her mount comes back, and she gives it shit for coming back. She's like, oh, you ran away. Yeah. Now you're back. And it's like, a, you know, it's a dog, and it's like, eh. And so she's walking around the wasteland, and it starts sniffing a rock. And this rock turns out to be a hidden little alien who has great clothes, great little cute outfit.
Star Wars went, you know what we haven't had in a minute? A cute little tiny creature that we can make a toy
out of.
They kind of
look like a mixture between crab people from South Park and a turtle.
Yes. Turtle, crab, snail thing.
Yeah. And it has the phoenix symbol. And like on it, like, right, like he has like a little thing that has the phoenix symbol, and it points at her symbol, and she asks if it knows Ezra, and turns out there is a fuck ton of them surrounding her right now. They're all most of these rocks are these creatures, and a bunch of these aliens, they show up and they all agree to take her to him.
Balin and Shin actually end up catching up to where Sabine killed the bandits, and we get some really awesome introspection from Skull. Because, you know, he's kind of looking around until he starts, you know, musing about the Jedi Order. And Shin just asks him straight up. She says, do you miss it? The Order. And he says, this is my favorite quote from the episode. Of all the good quotes there are, this is my favorite quote. He says, I miss the idea of it. But not the truth. The weakness. There was no future there.
As you all know, this was a meme. This became a meme, this quote.
It did.
It's a great meme.
And the first thing I thought was, like, it sounds like someone who's not quite over their ex after a breakup. He's just kind of like, and that's like, that's the biggest meme that I saw out of all of them, where it was just people being like, do I go back to your ex? I miss the idea, but not the weakness. He then reveals that he feels something greater calling to him on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Something is reaching out to him. And then he actually spots some more raiders up on a ridge, and Shin's about to go fuck them up. And it's kind of implied that, no, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yep. And now we finally get to the moment Sabine has been waiting for. And honestly, I've been waiting for, because fuck, it's taken 6 episodes. The aliens take her to their whatever village you want to call it.
Their camp.
And she looks around. Yeah, it's like a camp. It's like a nomadic village. And she hears a voice say, I knew I could count on you.
Yay!
Jabba the Hutt shows up.
Jabba! Hey!
I'm sorry. His name is Ezra. Ezra Bridger, Ezra, everybody. And she, you know, he's all excited, and he asks about, like, you know, what are you doing here kind of stuff. And she's like, let's not talk about that right now. I'm just happy I found you.
It's such
after
a
all
good
this time. Can
moment.
I have that? And he's like, all right, fine. Because he's trying to pry, like, oh, wait, where's everybody else? What's going on? How'd you get here? All that. And she's like, nope, just I want you. That's it. Just I want to be happy that I got you. I found you.
I was very worried about how they were going to, like, what the portrayal of him was going to be.
It was perfect.
It was brilliant.
He is perfect.
He is. It's,
he is,
you can
fucking
still,
perfect.
You can see flashes of the kid that he was from Rebels. But, like, this is a man who has spent 10 years growing and maturing on his own.
Yeah.
And it's
with
just
the beard and everything.
With the beard.
And he has hair now. He's not shaved anymore.
That was the worst look for him. So bad.
So he tells her, he says, thanks for finding me. I can't wait to go home. Boy, oh boy, does she have some explaining to do on that one. Oh boy. Yeah, he's excited to go home. But again, she's not telling him jack shit. So.
Which I remember when that episode came out, you texted me and you're like, that's such a fucking cop out. And I'm like, I mean, I get it. Because she's got a lot to explain. But also, like. Well, and honestly, for me, it just shows how selfish Sabine is even now that she's not revealing what she has done. Because I'll tell you right now, Ezra would not, like, if Ezra was told this what was going to happen to bring him home, he would have said no. He would have said, don't bring me home.
Yeah, yeah. He would say, we have to stop him right now.
Yeah, you have to blow up that portal and blow up that ship. Do not let them come get me.
Yep.
But also I think that now that it's happened, I don't think he's going to have too much of a negative reaction. It's more of just like, all right, this is what we got to do now.
Yeah.
Back on the Chimera, the cargo containers are continuing to be loaded on the ship. And again, they're sinister looking things, man. They look like coffins and they're kind of shaking and sort of moaning a little bit. Like, we're not quite sure. The sound design on this is like good because it's like, ooh, is this just the vibes they're giving off? Like, is this just the Night Sisters making noises over there? And Thrawn is, you know, he's standing there, and all of a sudden the Night Mothers approach him and they say they have sensed another Jedi presence. This one arriving on a Purrgil. And he says, that is unwelcome news.
Dun, dun, dun.
And he immediately deduces that it must be Ahsoka Tano. And Morgan Elsbeth fires back, well, Baylan Skull said that she was dead. And he fires back, but he was a Jedi. Like, he's already like, yeah, but he could be lying. You know, we don't know what his motives are.
Yeah.
He's not fully with us. He's a mercenary. Like, we don't know what's going on here. So he then just says, you know what? I want to know everything. I want to know her background. I want to know her master. Everything. And it was like,
80.
Oh, shit. Which we're going to talk about that in the next episode, because that's probably my favorite shot from that episode.
Yeah.
Because boy, oh boy, is he not going to like when he finds out who she is.
Oh, yeah.
He then requests the help of the Night Mothers. He goes, Night Mothers, I'm going to need your help with one last thing. So here we go. The battle is about to begin.
Hell yeah. And that's it. That's the end of the episode. So real quick, we're going to take a quick break.
Yep.
And we will be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, so now we're back. Overall thoughts. I'm going to say that to me, it emphasizes the concept of fate, free will, how the Force influences things.
But not necessarily.
Like, there's so many.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, there's so many. The questions I have here is, like, is fate predetermined, or are there predetermined, like, outcomes that can happen? And then based on all those choices, like, because time, obviously, time's now a thing in Star Wars, you know, time travel.
So yeah.
how is fate influenced? Does the Force push decisions in front of you more, or push you in the direction of that, so you make that decision? Prophecies, all that shit. This whole episode touches upon that.
I think it's fantastic. I think when you're making a character like this, who you are adapting to live action, who's been in the Star Wars realm for what, like 30 years at this point? I think first introduced in 86, I want to say. I could be wrong about that. But the fact that, like, he's a character that's, like, malevolently hung in the background of Star Wars for so long, not being officially official.
Mm-hmm.
You needed, but, like, being a beloved character by, you know, anyone who knew of him.
Yeah.
I think it's so perfect how they introduced him. I think just his appearance, him just casually strolling down that gangway. Oh, everything about it was perfect.
Now, I do have questions. Obviously, we've seen the end of the show.
Yeah.
But my questions, we don't know what's in those boxes.
We don't.
I want to know what the fuck's in those boxes, because that's a creepy thing. The other thing is, there's a lot of theories. I will not talk about this theory right now. I will mention it, but we will not dive into it until probably the end of the show. But it's like, who's calling out to Baylan Skull?
Yeah.
That's going to be great.
Who or what?
Overall. Yeah, and I want to know more about these stormtroopers, because We find out a little bit about some of them, but there's so many questions about them, and there's just
a fun theory that I saw, which we'll get the answer to later on in the show, is are these stormtroopers alive or not?
Yes. Yes.
Which is an interesting, that is an interesting concept too, because we know the Night Mothers have the ability to resurrect people from Star Wars to Clone Wars. So we might see the answer to that question. But I will say this. I like the idea of them being just loyal fucking soldiers of the Empire. Not of the Empire. Soldiers of Thrawn. They are followers, worshippers. He is their Kaiser. He is their Napoleon Bonaparte.
Yeah.
He is their Washington. Yeah. We are ride or die for you.
I would also really like to know about these creatures that have been like harboring, if you will, Ezra. I'd really like to know, like, what's their deal? What are they? What's their story? You know, that kind of stuff. There's just so much stuff about this planet where I'm like, okay, what the fuck is happening now?
It's just fun too that like that even when you're not in the Star Wars galaxy, this galaxy is also weird as fuck.
Everything is crazy, man. I love it. It's all different and strange. And I think they've done a great job of writing like into this like mystical nature of everything.
Yep.
It's way more into like that whole mysterious and, like I said, mystical nature. Like, that's just what it is, you know?
Yeah.
You have the Force that we kind of thought we all understood the Force to a degree, and now they just keep throwing in more questions and wrenches into the whole thing, and I love it because I don't think anybody is truly meant to fully understand the Force, and that's like kind of the point.
That's kind of like, I like that idea. Yeah,
we've added all this new mystery to it, and it makes it more fun.
The second you know what the Force is, they change it.
Yeah, which is great.
It's much like taxes.
Okay, yeah, unfortunately. Every 4 years, it's different.
It's different. I don't like it.
So, yeah, I mean, my only notes on this episode was I really think they handled Sabine in terms of, like, I don't know, the scenes of her, like, walking around the planet and stuff where, like, nothing was happening went on a little long. Like, if you scrub through the episode, if you're scrubbing, watching scenes, like looking in the scene order, like it is a bit of a chunk.
Yeah.
But like, then again, like, I don't care. It's a TV show. Like, if it was a movie, I would have been like, this is way too long. But for a TV show, like, it's fine. It wasn't excitable for me in terms of, like, I wasn't learning anything. I was just like sitting there. Like,
every time we had her walking across the thing, arguing with her fucking dog, we lost like more Thrawn being Thrawn. That's the only complaint I have.
That's the thing. I think really I wanted to see more of that character because I have not seen that character on screen. So I wanted to see more of that time. So I think the pacing for that was my only criticism. But again, that's just because I was so excited to be, I don't know if that's how everybody else felt, but I was more excited to see that character. So I wanted to see more.
Yeah.
And even, I will say, even in these last three episodes that we have, you don't see him quite a lot. You get like, it's really tiny amount of scenes.
Yeah.
They're great scenes when he's on screen, but like, it's not a lot, which is okay. But still, it's setting it up. I love it.
Dude, I'm so excited.
And I do love these stormtroopers. They're fucking sick.
These are the best designed stormtroopers we've seen, hands down. They are.
Oh yeah.
1000%. So you're going to get to see, you know, does Thrawn make it off the planet? Do Ezra, Ahsoka, and Sabine reunite and figure out a way to stop him? We're gonna find out in the next episode
of Dragon Ball Z.
That's kind of cool. And with that, we hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please take a second to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It really does help us grow the show. And be sure to connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at The Lost Cantina. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.